They walked on, slowly and carefully, treading lightly, patiently enduring the third of the four parts of their adventure. First had come the shipping container, and then had come the white van. Now came the hike, and then there would be another van. Everything had been explained beforehand in great detail in a small shipping office above a store in a town near their home. There were many such offices, and many such operations, but the one they had used was widely considered the best. The price was high, but the facilities were excellent. Their contact had assured them his only concern was that they arrive in America in the best of condition, as fresh as daisies. To that end, the shipping container, which would be their home for the longest of the four phases, was equipped with everything necessary. There were lamps inside with bulbs that simulated daylight, wired to automobile batteries. There were mattresses and blankets. There was plenty of food and water, and there were chemical toilets. There was medicine. There were ventilation slots, disguised as rust holes, and in case they weren't enough, there was a fan that ran off the same batteries as the lights. And there were oxygen cylinders that could be bled slowly if the air got stuffy. There was an exercise machine, so they could keep in shape for the 4-mile hike across the border itself. There were washing facilities and lotions and moisturizers for their skin. They were told that the vans were equipped with the same kind of stuff, but less of it, because the road trips would be shorter than the sea voyage. An excellent organization that thought of everything. And the best thing was that there was no bias shown against families with girl children. Some organizations would smuggle adults only, because adults could work immediately, and some allowed children, but older boys only, because they could work too. But this organization welcomed girls, and wasn't even upset if they were young, which was considered a very humane attitude. The only downside was that the sexes always had to travel separately, for the sake of decorum. So fathers were separated from mothers, and brothers from sisters. And then on this particular occasion they were told at the very last minute that the ship the men and the boys were due to sail on was delayed for some reason, so the women and the girls had been obliged to go on ahead. Which would be okay, they were told, because they would be well looked after at their destination for as long as it took for the second ship to arrive. They had been warned that the 4-mile hike would be the hardest part of the trip. But it wasn't, really. It felt good to be out in the air, moving around. It was cold, but they were used to cold, because winter in Thailand was cold, and they had warm clothes to wear. The best part was when their guide stopped and raised his finger to his lips again, and then traced an imaginary sideways line on the ground. He pointed beyond it and mouthed, "America." They walked on and passed the line one after the other and smiled happily and picked their way onward, across American soil at last, slowly and delicately, like ballet dancers. The Duncan driver in the gray van on the Montana side of the border saw them coming about 100 yards away. As always, his Canadian counterpart was leading the procession, setting the pace, holding the rope. Behind him, the shipment floated along, seemingly weightless, curving and snaking through the gaps between the trees. The Duncan driver opened his rear doors and stood ready to receive them. The Canadian handed over the free end of the rope, like he always did, like the baton in a relay race. And then he turned about and walked back into the forest and was lost to sight. The Duncan driver gestured into the truck, but before each of his passengers climbed aboard, he looked at their faces and smiled and shook their hands, in a way his passengers took to be a formal welcome to their new country. In fact, the Duncan driver was a gambling man, and he was trying to guess ahead of time which kid the Duncans would choose to keep. The women would go straight to the Vegas escort agencies, and 9 of the girls would end up somewhere farther on down the line, but one of them would stay in the county, at least for a spell, or actually forever, technically. Buy 10 and sell 9 was the Duncan way, and the driver liked to look over the candidates and make a guess about which one was the lucky one. He saw 4 real possibilities, and then felt a little jolt of excitement about a 5th. Not that she would be remotely recognizable by the time she was passed on to him. Dorothy Coe stood behind her truck's open door for 10 whole minutes. Reacher stood in front of her, watching her, hoping he was blocking her view of the barn, happy to keep on standing there as long as it took. 10 hours, or 10 days, or 10 years, or forever, anything to stop her going inside. Her gaze was 1,000 miles away, and her lips were moving a little, as if she was rehearsing arguments with someone. Look or don't look, no or don't know. Eventually, she asked,
"How many are in there?"
Reacher said, "About 60.
"Oh, my God."
2 or 3 a year, probably," Reacher said. "They got a taste for it, an addiction. There are no ghosts. Ghosts don't exist. What the stoner kid heard from time to time was real."
"Who were they all?"
"Asian girls, I think."
"You can tell that from their bones?"
"The last one isn't bones yet."
"Where were they all from?"
"From immigrant families, probably. Illegals, almost certainly, smuggled in for the sex trade. That's what the Duncans were doing. That's how they were making their money."
"Were they all young?"
"About 8 years old."
"Are they buried?"
Reacher said, "No."
"They just dumped in there?"
"Not dumped," Reacher said. "They're displayed. It's like a shrine." There was a long, long pause. Dorothy Coe said,
"I should look."
"Don't."
"Why not?"
"There are photographs. Like a record, like mementos in silver frames."
"I should look."
"You'll regret it. All your life, you'll wish you hadn't."
"You looked?"
"And I regret it. I wish I hadn't." Dorothy Coe went quiet again. She breathed in and breathed out and watched the horizon. Then she asked,